This is Getting Past Subtitles. My name is Sean Peel.
And I'm DK Lee.
And welcome to week three in our little Jet Li timeline lifespan.
You mean Bruce Lee, right?
Yes. For like a millisecond in my brain, I panicked. I was like, did I mess it up again? You will not get me this time. As I was like setting this up, I was like, I don't have to say, like, Bruce Lee's not related to any of this movie, so therefore I can't miss this one. I can't mess this up. Jet Li is the guy.
Yes.
Jet Li is the man. And then yeah, we're bouncing all over the place. Now we're back in the 2000s, in 2002. This is before Fearless. Would you consider this like a wushu movie? Do you think this is counts as one of those?
I think it is. It's more...
I think it's in the same vein as Fearless, where it's very, very loosely grounded and also based off, like, you know...
This is more like fiction, though. It's not really like...
But, like, still, like, they still kind of, like... It's, like, just enough...
Like a sprinkle.
Yeah.
They just kind of throw it in
there. Like there. But ultimately, like...
But it's not really,
Not at all.
Not at all.
Related to reality. Yeah. Oh, that would be cool if I could float. If I can learn a martial art that, like, hop, skips water.
You can. You just learned the wrong one.
That's true. I gotta get out of this country.
You just learned the wrong one.
But, this week we watched Hero. Very, very iconic film, right? Not to me though. This is my first time watching it.
Yeah.
But I was today years old when I realized why everybody loves this movie, and that it is indeed good. I really, really enjoy this movie. Before I jump in, like I said, it was released in 2002. The director was Yi Mao Zhang. So it was released in China in 2002. It didn't get to the U.S. until 2004, and although. So it was distributed in the U.S. by Miramax.
Yeah.
And they bought the rights in 2002, like, I think after its release. But they didn't distribute it in 2004. I read that they delayed it, like, six times.
Yeah.
I don't know what the underlying issue was or why, but it took, like, everybody and their mother, including Quentin Tarantino, to be, like, put out this movie.
Yeah, I think Tarantino endorsed it, and then that's how they got it. Released.
He was like, just use my name to bring in more viewers. Mm. And I mean, it worked.
I think that's what it was. I think they probably were scared that it probably wouldn't do that well in America.
Gotcha.
And so they were kind of hesitant to kind of release it.
But this was after, I read, after Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. So like there was already kind of like, you know.
There is, but still it's, you know, it's still like an international, you know, film. And
you're like sophomore slump.
And you're never, you know, you're never sure. Even now, you're never sure if like an international film will do really well. And it usually doesn't, right?
No, yeah, right.
It's not. It's very few and far between that an international film really does well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, but it did do well. I think it was in the box office highest for like 2 weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
Top for 2 weeks. Yeah.
And I think it won. No, it didn't win, but it got nominated.
Almost won. Yeah.
Best foreign film. For the Oscars. But that was in 2002.
Yeah.
That was a couple years before. So it took Tarantino to kind of endorse the movie, and then it kind of became a hit when it did release here. In China, though, it did really well. I think it was the most expensive movie for its time when it was produced.
To date. At that time, yeah.
Dude, like, everything is practical in that movie.
And
it's crazy.
It's just, you know, the scale of it is.
Yeah. Like, I watched that, and I was like, no way this is all real. Mm. Like, the more you look at it, you're like, that's all legit. Mm. It's like, they actually used, like, the People's Liberal China Army, right? And it was, like, an estimated 18,000 extras that they used.
That's only possible in China. You know what I mean? To bring that many people.
Bro, 18,000 people.
Yeah.
That's bonkers. How do you facilitate like that many people in it?
Seriously.
You know, I've been to a couple, you know, football games and stadiums. It's not easy.
Probably like four or five of those.
Yeah. That definitely took a lot. I mean, it probably helped. I mean, they're all in an army, so they're kind of, you know, already in that mentality. But yeah, like all extras, I mean, all the costumes, all the drapery, all the locations, the whole, like, even the lake scene, like, that was all practical. It took 3 weeks, I read, for them to shoot that, because it was, like, the water needs to be still, you know? So, yeah, so, I mean, definitely a huge endeavor, but it paid off. It's definitely, like, it's just one of those things where, like, I watch it, and it's, like, this is just really hard to be done again.
Visually, really, it's quite magnificent, I think, in terms of the cinematography and the colors that they use, especially, and the way that they kind of use that to tell the story.
You know? Right.
I think really it stands out, right, 100%. From, you know, a lot of movies, different movies. It's definitely very artistic. It's, like, very stylistic, right,
100%.
In the way that the film is portrayed. And I think the use of that color and the use of, like, you know, the wire, you know, action and all that kind of works together.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, for example, like, Fearless, I feel like, is trying to be a little more grounded, but they still use, like, the wire action to kind of help aid some of the action and kind of give it more momentum.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that here it's I wouldn't say, like, it's used better, but I think that it's fits the general aesthetic.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. Where, yeah, like, in Fearless, it feels it's just, like you said, used to elevate the action, just make it more entertaining, which is give it sort of, like, that blockbuster edge that, you know, that we talked about that episode. But here, like you said, it definitely is aiding the aesthetic, and it just fits the overall tone and the story and just, like, just the world.
And the feeling that it's, like, a legend, right?
Yeah, yeah. It feels like
legendary people kind of thing.
This movie,
like a myth,
feels like an opera piece.
Yeah, like, exactly. You know,
like, it feels, like, very sort of Shakespearean, or just, like, it doesn't feel like a movie. Like, I watched this, I was like, this is, like, just, like, an artistic piece in a way, you know?
Yeah. And, like, for me, too, generally, I honestly don't really like wire action, just because I don't like the weightlessness of it, like, the feeling, and
it gets a little goofy.
And it just doesn't feel like, you know, there's not a lot of, like, impact to it. But in this movie, I think that because it feels like an almost like an opera, or, like, it kind of feels like this legend that's being told, like like an old story that's being told through like, you know, like, oration. It kind of feels like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so here, I think that it kind of works well because it's these characters who are almost, you know, they're not like real people. They're almost like mythical, right? In one sense. And I think that the wire action kind of lends itself well to that.
100% agreed.
And definitely the scale also really lends to that as well, you know?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just funny, like, I definitely had the like the opposite feeling that I have compared to Fearless, where, like, it was a good movie, and I thought I was more surprised by the story, but it felt like blockbustery, but also I don't know, like, it didn't have sort of that edge or anything like that really made it kind of stand out or special. But this movie really, really had that. I kind of wrote down that, like, overall my feelings for the movie were, I really liked it. I was really surprised by it. I had a good time watching it. But, like, as much as the style, like, it's a very stylistic movie, right? As much as that is really pushing up the weight for the bulk of what we're seeing, it also has, like, a really great story, like, and really, you know, interesting enough characters and just, like, interesting, like, intricacies that kind of carries the whole thing through. And it's not just pretty to look at. You know what I mean? So that's kind of how I felt. But what was sort of your impressions? When did you, because you've seen this before in the past, so how, kind of,
give us your backstory. Yeah, I think I saw it when it, like, basically when it came out, like, 2000, like, 20 years ago. It's crazy, man, to think about it like that.
Date, yeah.
But, yeah, well, back then, I was a kid, so, like, you know, I just watched it and just saw it. And
floating.
And the one thing that actually, the thing that, like, I remember the most from back then was actually the arrow, the last scene when he gets shot by the arrows.
Yeah.
And then it, like, pans to like that little hole.
Yeah,
like where it's just like his silhouette of like arrows, right? I think that stuck to me the most actually when I was younger. And for me, more than all the wire and the action, it was more the scale of the movie that really captivated me. I was like, dang, how do you have that many people? Or like,
yeah.
You know, especially like when there's like those, you know, when they're shooting the arrows, like all of those scenes when they're shooting arrows, it's just like
crazy.
There's so many arrows everywhere, right? And all of that stuff just kind of felt really grand and really big to me as a little kid. And so I think that's what like captivated me the most. Obviously, I didn't really know about what the story was about or who, you know, these people were, but.
Too complicated for your child mind?
Yeah, I was in, what, like, second grade?
Oh, okay.
Something like that. So, yeah, it was definitely, something, I think, spectacular when I was younger.
Yeah.
Watching it again now, I think it's definitely, it holds up because of its stylistic choices, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the story is not bad either, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, like, the uniqueness of the movie keeps it fresh.
Yeah.
Keeps it, like, gives it that timeless kind of quality to it, you know? But yeah, I really felt like I was watching a Kurosawa movie again, watching this. Just like, especially, what was the last one that we watched? With the other king that like...
Ran?
It felt very much like that. Just like the scale of it and like this very kind of... It felt like an epic in a way, right?
Yeah.
So it's like the way that movie starts off where... He goes to the kingdom and there's just like everybody's lined up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like him going, like, just they make the little hallway and up the stairs. I was like, geesh, it's so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I do believe it's your week. What do you have really quick? Dun, dun, dun.
The synopsis. Dun, dun, dun.
The names are easy. You shouldn't wobble this.
Yeah. So the story, we follow a character named Nameless.
what?
And he is actually he's a commoner, but he is an assassin that basically killed these other assassins to gain a name for himself because these other assassins were trying to kill the king of the Qin Empire or Qin Dynasty, I think.
Yeah.
And so, this guy reportedly was able to best those three assassins who were kind of the strongest assassins in the the land, and he was able to best them. And because of that, the king of the Qin Dynasty calls him to meet with him because he wants to know what happened and how he was able to kill these assassins. And so Nameless is taken to the palace, and there he starts to talk and explain to the king how he killed these three different assassins.
Yeah.
And as he is going through, basically he starts telling the story and he starts talking with the king. He gets closer and closer to the king as the king gains more trust with the king as they're talking.
But there were like rewards for bounties, essentially.
Right. Yeah. There's rewards for bounties as well, but basically every time he would show the king like proof, like for example, the spear of Sky, one of the assassins, or the sword of the Flying Snow, one of the other assassins, or you know, the other sword from
Broken Sword,
which is his name as well. They all have some names interesting names. Yeah. But so, you know, as he is talking to him, he, you know, starts to explain, but then the king kind of questions him and doubts him and like tries to see if he's really telling the truth.
Yeah.
And there lies a deeper truth within the story that he's telling. And he's actually not there to like save the king, but he was actually planning to kill the king by faking the deaths of these other assassins to gain the trust of the king, and so that he's able to get closer to the king and eventually try to kill him. But by the end, he realizes, through what Broken Sword realizes, that the only way for the land, for the country, for the empires to have peace is to be unified under one banner. And so he decides to not kill the king, and he leaves, or tries to leave the palace, but the king basically executes him because, you know, everyone saw that he was about to kill the king.
That is law.
And so, yeah, it's law. And so he gets killed, but then he is buried as a hero. And eventually, well, in the ending credits, it says that the countries are united under one banner and happily ever after. I don't know.
It's more like a happily ever after?
Yeah.
Question mark?
And it's kind of the like a mythic story about the unification, the first time that China was unified under one banner.
Yeah, under the Qing Dynasty, I guess, right? Yeah. So also very, very loose retelling of kind of like a piece of history, but not really.
Ultra loose.
I would like to think that these things happened. Okay? Let me believe. I was really, like, I think for the most part, I was really engaged by this movie. Like, I said, I really went in fresh. Like, I didn't really anticipate much what was going on. Like, I've seen, like, you know, the infamous lake scene, like, and all those things. So, but outside of the action, I didn't really know what to expect. So, like, seeing everybody in the cast was really awesome.
Great cast.
Like, really, really super.
Killer cast.
Tony Leung is playing, you know, the heartthrob again, as usual.
Yeah,
the romancer.
I mean, you know, in the mood for love, they're back together again.
he's a smooth criminal for sure. Jet Li's character. Like, I understand now, like, what you said, I guess, a lot when we're talking about this movie, that he's the protagonist, question mark, but he's not the forefront of the movie. It is a little bit of... I wouldn't even call it an ensemble cast because, like, he leads it in the beginning and he's just kind of the glue for everything. But for the most part, it's about, like, Broken Sky.
He's kind of the, you know, the unreliable narrator, right?
Yeah.
Within the story where he's telling the story to the king and
making us believe.
The king's, like, trying to figure out the things. And we're kind of in the king's shoes a little bit, right?
Sure.
In one sense, trying to figure out, you know, what the truth is and trying to piece the things together, the story together.
Yeah. And then we're, like, led astray. Or, like, it's made, like, oh, like, that's not the truth at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything kind of comes into fruition.
Yeah, and going off that, I think... I really love how they kind of do the flashbacks, or like, they retell the same story, but then from a different point of view, right?
Yeah.
Like, and they all depict that through color, right? Like, the first time we see the story of Broken Sword and Flying Snow, it's in red.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's this retelling of the story by a nameless, and he's kind of telling the story of these two lovers who kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
And Sky, one of the other assassins, kind of came into their love triangle and became a love triangle. And you know, Flying Snow and Sky became a thing. And then because of that, there's, like, jealousy, and then they started, you know, they killed each other. Yeah, betrayed one another. And like, that's
I exploited
the love.
Their romance.
Yeah, their romance and stuff. And, like, you know, portraying that through color, you know.
Yeah.
First time, it's in red. And then next time when the king tells it, right, he's like, no, I remember.
You lie.
I remember, like, you know, Broken Sword and Sky being these honorable, you know, whatever, assassins when I first fought them.
Yeah.
And when he starts talking about it, it turns to this blue. They're all wearing blue. It's very
cool. Yeah.
Use of all the blue colors and kind of utilizing that. And then after that, another time when that story is kind of retold, but, you know,
the
real truth, right, is in green, right?
The flashback is in green.
See, when he's, you know, fighting, when Flying Snow and Broken Sword infiltrate the palace, it's all in green, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the use of color like that to kind of push the narrative, I think, is really, really cool.
Yeah.
And refreshing.
Really refreshing, yeah, like, really simple as well. Like, oh, like, that was, it's just such a great use of just like knowing kind of, or like once you real, because once you, you don't really realize it until after the fact. Mm. But then once you kind of click, it's like, oh, it's kind of like right. sectioned off.
And then the real truth is all in white.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, great use of color. It's like, oh, the red was a lie. It's red bad.
I don't necessarily think it was like that kind of choice for using it.
But yeah, I don't think there was. I think I was like reading that. I don't think there was any sort of motif.
Thematic, yeah.
Thematic choice for colors.
For colors, yeah.
It was just simply just a way to, just to section off like perspectives, mm-hmm. essentially. But I think it kind of worked. Like white is like very pure, right? You know, red is kind of like in that sense, so. That was pretty
or cool. Like signifying like love and passion,
right? Yeah, yeah. It's a very like passion, very like a fear driven kind of story. The blue, I don't know what that's about.
Blue kind of like honor and like
yeah
tranquility,
okay.
peace, I'll give you maybe that. I don't know, like, you know,
I give you that. Yeah, yeah,
something like that.
Green, don't write this down.
Green is a little bit harder,
green, yeah. Flashbacks, I don't know. Roots, I don't know. Yeah, I thought it was cool that the kings, like when he was telling it, and we go back into that, it's very like you said, you know, he's like, these were very like honorable assassins, like they were very honorable people and they very much like trusted each other, and like that story of them, of like how they it came to be, mm-hmm. and that Nameless like asked them, basically like persuaded them to help, but ultimately they didn't betray each other, they just like fought for who was gonna die first, kind of thing, yeah. right? That it was just like, it was just funny. It was just funny to see that the way that he envisioned the plan working was like in such high regard for his enemies, yeah. you know? Like they were so pure in that sense. But the truth was like not really. Yeah. But you have the villain who's like the tyrant or whatever, mm. but he has like the most pure vision. For the story,
yeah.
So that was kind of that's so what, that was
I
like
want this story to be good. Yeah.
I don't believe my enemies were bad guys per se. That's not my impression of them. So I thought that was pretty cool, and that like Nameless's lie was that that they just like he exploited them and that they hated each other,
yeah.
Whatever, and they like literally backstabbed each other. I was surprised on that scene when he like tried to rip them apart, and then Flying Snow backstabs him like quite literally through the door. Just I was like, "Oh shit!" Yeah, I didn't expect
straight
it.
Straight up,
yeah. I was like, "Whoa, that's ruthless." It's gonna go down like this. I thought we were gonna get into like lovers' quarrel. I didn't think that we were drawing swords. So that kind of caught me off guard. But I mean, from that point on, I was like really invested, and then. You know, I was there for the roller coaster ride when it was like, oh, so there's a more than meets the eye as the story goes on.
Yeah.
So I really, really enjoyed it. I think, and as far as Jet Li goes, I mean, this movie is definitely not showcasing a lot of him compared to the other ones, but I do think it's the best movie that he's in that
we've seen really? So far.
Yeah. What do you think?
It's good. I mean, it's a good movie. I wouldn't say it's his best, but definitely, I think that. I mean, I think since it's the biggest budget movie, sure. there's a lot of like a scale it's, difference
right,
between
yeah, right.
his other movies as well.
Like, so it's unfair to compare.
Yeah, that might be a little, you know, but.
Yeah, yeah.
I do have a soft spot for Fist of Legend, so
Fist of Legend is really good. Like it has the, you know, like the commentary element of it, right? That it's really talking about some. But like you said, like the scale of it, I think that's the part that I wanted more was I don't know, something a little more epic or something that was a little more modern or just executed a little better. And I think Hero kind of does that for me.
Yeah.
In that sense. So but yeah. I mean, really beautiful movie, though. We could talk about that. But what's your favorite part? What's the best thing to look at?
There's so many, you know, in this movie. Like, yeah. There's so many different parts. I do really like the infiltration when, you know, the green moment the green, everything when it's green, when
with the drapery.
The drapery castle. And when the king and Broken Sword start fighting in the palace and all of that happening, and like, you know, they're just trying to find each other in this maze of green.
Yeah.
And then like at the end when the drapes fall, and then, you know, Broken Sword could have killed the king, but he basically spares his life. Mm. And just all of that, like, and even just like them fighting through the mass army that's like guarding the front of the palace,
just blowing their way through.
Yeah. And you know, it's just so funny how like as they're like fighting, just like shields and spears just like are thrown in the sky.
People
in the
are
air.
Literally just like,
which is funny. But I think, you know, it's very artistically like very pleasing, like, you know, stylistically it's just like a great scene, I think, for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's scale. Yeah. It's just kind of
like, I mean, there's so many I can talk about. Like I like the fight scene with Sky and Nameless in the beginning when they kind of have that like mind battle, you know?
Yeah, I really like
and
that.
And then the rain, like you see all the rain, and then the guy who's playing the instrument in the back.
They just like, he's plays and then he's done. And then he's like, I'm out of here. And then he's like, wait.
I'll pay you.
And then gives him a butt ton of cash.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll do whatever you want, dude.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to play. And then they don't fight for the entire period. They're just like having Jedi mind tricks with one another.
Yeah. It's just a very, you know, cool take on like fighting, right? It's like, hey, instead of us like actually fighting, let's fight and see how far we'll get.
Who's going to do what first?
It's kind of like, it's kind of that anime thing where they're like,
100%.
Oh yeah, he like knows like my every move, and I have to figure out which move I'll have to do. And then they're like,
sweat coming down.
Like, go like 50 different steps later, and then they're trying to figure out like how to beat each other, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Who's going to best who?
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like,
oh no.
Get the same.
I don't have the skills to beat this guy.
It's going to last like 10 episodes between fighting him. Yeah. My final form. And then he takes out like the protective thing for his spear.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, oh, you are worthy.
He didn't fight anyone else with that.
What caught me really surprised was like, because that's like the first fight scene, right?
Mm.
And I before that, he's fighting the like the elite guards from King's Army. And like, that's all really like that whole fight sequence with the like the six guys. It's really grounded. Like he doesn't take the thing out, but none of them are really doing wire work anything. They're just like, you know, fighting on the ground, and he swiftly beats everybody. And then out of nowhere, Nameless comes in, and then immediately it's like, fly. And it's like, flow.
Yeah.
And it's like a whole other realm of martial art. Like, it's a whole other take on fighting from what I just saw 5 seconds ago.
It's because they're on another level.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. He's like, well, I gotta pull out the feather foot.
The big guns.
So it really like kind of threw me for a loop for a second, because I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is, you know, it's very pretty. Like, this is well done. And all of a sudden it's like Zack Snyder slow motion, like floating wire work. Like, oh, this is the skill that we're in now, you know? So that like whole thing was kind of neat. But yeah, I really liked that. That was well done. Like, it was in black and white, kind of like, just the use of colors and changing things. And shout outs to Donnie Yen. Obviously, he's pretty cool. I think Jet Li was the reason why he was in this movie. He like endorsed Donnie Yen to play that role, because somebody else was supposed to play it, and then they dropped out. And Jet Li was like, "Hey, I know some guy.
I know a guy named Iman.
I can
play the role.
He's good enough." He's good enough, you know? Yeah, that one was really cool. I don't know. I honestly don't know what my favorite would be. Maybe that one. I don't know. I just felt like maybe I saw, like, because all the other fight scenes happened, like, 3 times in a row, right?
Yeah, like just the fighting at the camp.
Yeah.
Kind of happens, like, 3 times.
But they're all, like, condensed. Like, they're not really
right
entire sequences, right?
And then the fighting at the lake or whatever.
That's the other one. That's the other really big one. That one's cool. But even that's not really fighting. It was more of just like performance art. You know, like they're just hopping and skipping.
A lot of it's kind of like that though here in this movie. Like, you know, yeah. when Moon and Flying Snow fight.
That was the other one. I actually didn't really like, I think that's my least favorite.
Where it's like all yellow, right?
In the
they're
leaves.
Fighting in the leaves.
Yeah.
And then just like these leaves start attacking her.
Yeah.
Every she's time like, she no. goes hurricane.
She's an airbender.
Yeah.
You're no match for my power, mm-hmm. Moon. Get out of here, Moon. The mistress. Yeah, I guess the first fight scene is probably my favorite because the only other way I can think of is like when we get to that, what really happened when Nameless proposes the plan to them, and what is it? Flying Snow gets on his side and says that she'll cooperate, but Broken Sword refuses to kill the king, and he's like, "I'm gonna stop you from doing it." And all of a sudden, she's like, "Well, we gotta kill him now because he's not, you know, he's not part of the team." And so that whole bit happens. That one is pretty cool, though. The whole sequence is fine.
Yeah.
He's got the wobbly sword. Just starts smacking. Wobble, wobble, swink. Yeah. But I think it really works. I really liked just how everything kind of unfolded. And, like, mm-hmm. just between, like, the deception and how, like, everything was kind of neat. Like, I totally would have believed his lie, you know, which I did. And then the king's perspective was like, well, actually, you're definitely lying. And I believe this is what happened. And that felt definitely more fantasy-like, though. But just because also it was also like, I would never betray you. Like, it was very much like that, you know?
Yeah.
And then Nameless, once he's like figured out for the most part, and he's like, well, actually, you know, you forgot about this part, which was Broken Sword and sort of like his true motive. Then it felt like really grounded, like this was like okay, kind of something that maybe his character would really do.
Yeah, and then like that Romeo and Juliet ending.
And, oh my god, bro!
Broken sword and flying snow.
I'm not gonna defend myself. I mean, they no matter what happened, they all died. They both died at the end.
Yeah,
like in every iteration, they didn't make it.
Deads.
They deads. And Moon is just like.
No, every single time she's like, no.
At least she died in the first one, you know, like at least she had some kind of conclusion.
Oh wait, did she die in the first one?
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
she,
yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. She got stabbed. But no, she's just gonna left to suffer.
She's just chilling.
Bam, bam, bam. Yeah.
There's a lot to, I think, digest in this movie.
Yeah. From an academic perspective, you could do a lot. I think as well.
What do you mean?
I mean, just like, I mean, specifically cinematography-wise, there's a lot to look at and to dig into. And just, to, you know, just informative-wise and, like, how to craft a scene, you know, just, I mean, obviously use of color.
Yeah.
Just, like, you know, where to place the camera. I think my biggest, I think we're going to talk about issues. My biggest issue was, like, editing, maybe, or... Like, the way that the movie was cut, and a lot of times it's action. I think it's just, like, coming off of Fist of a Legend, where it's very, like we say, kind of grassroots, like, very, like, you see the action in a wide, like, everything feels like it's in a master shot. Like, we can kind of really appreciate Jet Li's abilities.
Yeah.
Here, it's, like, it's more of, like we said, it's very kind of like an opera. It's very, like, fantastical. And then it's not really playing for that. Mm. And so what I'm seeing is like a lot of like shot for shot. And it was a specific action. Like, oh, he does this cool floating kick. And it's just like a shot of just that. And then like cut to something else. Like it's all works for like bringing out the wire work or bringing out that fantasy level of it. But what I kind of get lost was like blocking of the characters.
Right.
Or just like sometimes maybe the flow of the scene a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's most prevalent, I think, in the fight with Flying Snow and Moon.
Mm-hmm.
that you kind of lose that, right? Like the sense of like, okay, what's happening? Because every time it's just like a close-up shot of her like swiping her sword and then this tornado basically, right?
And then they're in the air.
Like four times. And then, yeah, in the air and then all of that stuff. Like I said, like there's a lot to digest in this movie. Mm-hmm. But I think that like you said, for me, I didn't really like approach it as a like an action movie. I think, you know, because we watch so many of Jelly's films now that it's very focused on action, right?
Yeah.
Where like, you know, there's not a lot of the kind of wire work or like, you know, it's very focused on like you said, the master and seeing everything.
Yeah.
And that kind of editing. I think in this movie it's more like the way that they shot it, also, you know, the story itself is kind of more it's more focused on like making it look good, right? Like showing like a beautiful like overall scene, right?
Right.
Rather than just like making the action look good.
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of is the difference between, you know,
yeah,
like let's say for example like Fist of Legend and Hero. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it like I said, it's less towards the action or like physical parts, and it's definitely shot more to support kind of the story, sort of kind of keep things moving, or really just reflecting like the tone or like what's happening in the scene. Like I'm thinking of like the lake scene specifically, right? When he's like, oh, I assume that like you and Broken Sword fought as well, just for like honor's sake, right? Essentially, because you killed his wife.
Yeah, so for Fist of Legend, the action, like they tell the story through the action.
Yeah.
And it's very much like what's happening in the moment kind of thing. Mm. Whereas in Hero, the action and the, you know, the things that are happening is a reflection of the overarching like emotion or the theme that's happening in that moment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you said, like during that lake scene, the action is there and like it's happening, but it's more about that, like defending my honor, you know, my honor, like, you know, my wife, like, you know,
because
she died or whatever. Or like,
and it says it clearly, like, it's like you're fighting, but your hearts weren't in it. So it feels very like
it's about loose. The heart, right? It's the heart of the scene rather than just like this cool action that I have to show, right? Same thing for like the green scenes, right? When, you know, they're fighting the king and Broken Sword's fighting. It's like the action is there, but you really, honestly, it's like very like choppy if you think about it.
Exactly.
Like the way that they shoot it, or like the way that the action happens, right? There's not a lot of like just like two people fighting, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of like these like close-up shots of like the sword or like, you know, the drapes, and then like he's like a close-up shot of the king, and then the guys in the back, and like, you know, all of these different things. So it's more about the overarching like emotional like impact of the action rather than the action itself.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm describing it like
I get exactly what you mean. Like like you said, it's not showing you, like you said, kind of in Fist of Legend, which is you're shooting for action. We're not watching it as it's playing out in the moment. Like we're not, like you said, they're kind of telling action through story. Like if he's going on a secret revenge for his master and he's like fighting him, we're like watching the fight sequence as a story in itself, and we're there in the moment. Here, it's not like that. Like I said, it's very choppy, and that's where like my initial comment, where it's like you kind of get lost in the blocking and things don't make sense, but because it's not really a focus.
Yeah, it's more of a meta thing, right?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
The action is more of a meta thing. Like for example, like when Moon and Flying Snow are fighting, and like all that, like, you know, the wind is happening and all the leaves are going crazy. It's kind of the internal state of the two characters and the kind of turmoil that they have as well, right? It's not just the action itself, right? But it's also trying to express that emotional thing.
Mm.
And when the leaves turn red, it's kind of showing that, like, you know, it's fallen. Like, it's fall now. It's red and kind of bloody, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of emotional aspect to the action that it's trying to portray, right?
Yeah. Like I said, like in the flashback when he's set when he's like about to assassinate the king, right? And it's like they're in the green drapery, and he like Purgatory gets lost in the shadows, right? And the king is like lost, and it's like what it's showing is like the king is being bested in this moment, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, he can't find them. He's like lost in the shadows, and he's like, he sees him and he tries to get him, and it's like cutting down all the drapes, but he's like keeps missing. It's like what we're watching is like this frantic state of mind that he's in, that he's clearly, you know, losing. Whereas Broken Sword is, you know, obviously being superior in this moment. But like, if you're looking at it from like an action perspective, or like shot for shot, it's just like very cutty. It's very like, he's here, but it's like, it's a repeat shot, or like, I've seen that drape cut like six times, right? Like, you know, but it's
and by the end of that shot, all the drapes fall down, it's kind of like a sense of clarity, right? Like, there's no more like hiddenness. There's no more like, it's not no more a maze, right? It's all the green fell, and it's just a king left alone in that palace, and it's kind of that realization or like final clarity in that moment, and it's beautifully done, right? It's almost symbolic of that, and it's not necessarily like a direct like, this is the action thing.
right. Yeah. And I mean, overall, like, just us talking about it, it does a really good job of the movie doing that in general, of just getting sort of feelings across and getting just, you know, what is on your mind, or like, what is sort of the theme of in the scene going on without explicitly saying it at all. And this movie is like virtually dialogueless as well. Like, it's very
sparse.
Very sparse, and when they do talk, it's very straight to the point. Like, just the whole scenes between Nameless and the King is very like, yes, no, of course, who, you know? Uh-huh. It's very, very monotone in that sense. But I thought it was great. I think that's one of my favorite parts of the movie, too, is kind of how straightforward it is. And just, like, there's a little, like, dichotomy between Nameless and the King.
Mm-hmm.
The King's very like very like insightful, like, you know, he's like, he's very kind of open, and he's like, how did you do this? And he's like, I heard you do this, you know. He's kind of like the one asking the questions, and Nameless is very much like just kind of answering it and going through it, you know. But then there's also like a sense of shock as well when he gets figured out. He's like, well, you're very insightful, King. In that sense.
Yeah, I am here to kill you.
Why else would I be here? What are you talking about? Why'd you let me in? There was all that. It's I really liked, on that note, like, I think that the language of the movie is in Mandarin. But like, the way that they speak Mandarin is different. Like, it's very, like I said, it's kind of monotone, very straightforward, but it's very dramatized. Like, it kind of adds to the opera kind of tone of it, but it's very like, oh, how, you know what I mean? But that just kind of like really adds to the dramaticness of the movie. It really sets the tone of it, you know what I mean? But everything works in like unison, I think, is just my final point. Everything really kind of synchronizes together and gets across. Favorite character? Least favorite character?
Lee.
Moon.
Who?
You don't like Jet Li's character?
That is my favorite character, is it?
Oh.
Nah, I'm just kidding. I actually like Sky. He's the least he comes out the least. But for the little bit he comes out, I think he's a pretty cool dude.
He's like, yeah. It's funny that he's there. He's like he's kind of vital to the story. He's like, oh, one of the main assassins, but he was never like in the assassination attempt scene. Nah. So like, was he ever a threat? But then they pitch him as like, they all kind of work together with Broken Sky, or like he was pinnacle in like breaking up that relationship. But then like that didn't turn out to be true. Yeah. So then you're like,
he's like,
why?
Nothing, dude.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, why was that guy even?
He was useless. He was just
there. By the end of it was like,
yeah,
what?
It was just a threat.
He was just a threat. But I think like he needed to best them to like convince Broken Sky and Flying Snow, or Broken Sword and Flying Snow, that he's like legit.
Uh-huh.
But he did a demonstration in front of them.
He's like, oh yeah, your sword's fast.
So was it really need to murder somebody?
Yeah.
We don't question these things. Nah. It is what it is. But yeah.
I mean, if you're trying to find sense in these movies, you're gonna find very little of it. So
it's all about aesthetics. It's just aesthetics. Yeah, like when so what is it? Like the army comes in, right? And it was like an assassination attempt on the Quinn's army when they shoot all the arrows towards the calligraphy school.
Yeah,
and all the students just go back to painting. Like he's like, no, like all we have left is writing. So write till you die, and they're like, all right. And there's like a couple of students that like just drop while writing. Like, no way.
Yeah, like the blocking the arrow scene. Wow. Don't block arrows. Let's go.
Let's go.
Like, oh, you're pretty good.
Yeah, I know. They come out. He's like watching Broken Sword like do his thing. And he's like, I'm going to go help. And Broken Sword's like, what are you up to? And then the mistress comes out, Flying Snow. And he's like, you must be Flying Snow. And she's like, I don't need your help. And he's like, I'm going to help anyway. And she's like, you know what? You're actually not that bad. You're pretty cool.
It's funny.
I did like the little note, or just the little scene where he's like, writing, and then the arrow comes in and breaks his stick.
he just grabs
another one and goes back.
Goes back to it.
I'm the badass. But yeah, lucky old man. That guy, all the arrows missed him while he was writing.
I'm sure it hit him by the end of it.
Huh?
I'm sure it hit him by the end of it.
why can't Nameless have that skill? He could have defended all those arrows at the end.
At the end? He probably did have it. He just chose not to.
That man's a G. Come on. All for my country. Yeah. Overall, that movie is definitely special for sure. You know, it took me 2 years old to find out, but
20 years. 20 years later.
23? I mean, like most of Jelly's movies, I remember seeing this movie around. I just never watched it.
I'm sure.
That I've seen it?
No, I'm sure you've heard of it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I think actually, like, I mix this movie up with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon a lot. That they just kind of feel the same in my mind. Even though I haven't seen Crouching Tiger either.
I see.
We'll get there.
Hey, I'll be honest. I didn't really like it too much.
Yeah. Ang Lee's like hit or miss. I don't know.
It's whatever.
He's whatever. Maybe we'll do a Wirework series.
Wirework. And find the craziest ones possible.
floating man series.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one's a good one. I don't know. For like a Jet Li series, this one, it feels a little out of place just because he's not very...
What do you mean? He's a main character.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he though?
Yes, he is.
Are you sure?
He's 100%.
Are you... Are you sure?
Yeah, his name's first.
By technicality, yes. With like 6 lines in the whole movie.
Well, I don't think you have to be the central. Yeah, I don't think you have to come out the most to be the main character.
He like, I'm like all 3 movies though. I mean,
I'm sure he had the most screen time, though, actually, if you probably count the minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
It just kind of feels like it's divided very... Because I think it's the colors. The colors make you feel like there's a lot more of that in there.
Of, like, other things?
Mm.
Yeah. For me, it's just, like, the focus of the story, though. Like, you know, he's there, obviously, in the beginning.
He's in all of the stories, though.
I mean, he's in all the stories, but he's not the forefront of all of the stories. Like,
he's the one orchestrating all of it, though.
Yes, but it's like, what actually, like, who's taking, like, who's, like, drawing in more is Tony Leung and Maggie Cheung. Like, they're like, okay. They're like, they have more of an impact on the story than this guy who's like, I'm gonna kill one of you.
He's basically the one devising the plans to make them do stuff.
I guess, yeah.
And then they're trying to figure out their own issues.
and then he like, but he doesn't even know what he wants to do till like the very end. He's like, I'm going to seek revenge. And then by the end, he's like, actually, I think that Broken Sword guy was right.
Well, that's because, you know, the story, they're repeating the same story in different ways three times. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, which is probably why it feels like that.
I mean, I'm just, I know. That's not how I actually feel.
I know.
I'm playing devil's advocate right now. That's all. Yeah. But what I was saying is, like, in the last two movies, Jet Li has been like this deadpan character. Like, there's no life in this guy.
No, but this one especially.
But
no.
This one up for sure. For sure. Fearless has been the most, but even he has gone. Mm. He went down there, you know?
Yeah.
And then he worked his way back up, but. Is it the same for the next one?
Actually, it's been a long time since I've watched it. I think it's not as, it's definitely not even near, nowhere near close to this one.
Okay.
In terms of like how straight he plays it.
He's like, who are you talking about?
So the next one we're going to watch is about like a, so Jet Li plays a monk who it's like a, I don't know if it's a folklore or like a myth, but it's like about this monk who's kind of in that like folklore or whatever. Like it's kind of this like
a Buddhist tale,
kind of like the superhero of way back when kind of
okay
thing.
Yeah,
like this kind of like, you know, monk who like, you know, fought for, you know,
who could do a Kamehameha.
Yeah.
Chi ball.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
kind of like that. Yeah.
Monks are deadpan.
No, not all monks. Shaolin soccer. Definitely not deadpan.
They weren't monks. They were Shaolin martial artists.
Shaolin monks.
But they were like...
The dude was a monk. He came down to preach his Shaolin, you know? Shaolinness.
He was modernized. He was a modernized guy.
Mm-hmm.
No. We'll see. I'll be the judge of that. Hopefully we get to wrap it up for the series, though. Should be cool.
Yeah.
He's nimble again. This is...
I think this is probably when he's youngest from all of our...
Yeah. 1992.
Yeah.
We are talking about Once Upon a Time in China.
Yes.
Yeah. From 1992. So this would be his earliest in the series anyway.
Yeah.
So he'll be even more nimble than the upside down kick he did last movie.
Yes.
That one was by, next week is by Tsui Hark is the director of the movie. Yeah, I have no idea where to find this one. Where did you watch this movie, by the way? On Pluto?
Like a long time ago?
Or this time around. Or did you own this movie on DVD?
I haven't watched this yet.
No, oh, I mean, you mean Hero. Hero.
Oh, I watched it on Amazon.
Oh, Amazon? Oh, yeah. YouTube had a pretty cool, had a pretty good...
YouTube had it?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know.
I rented it.
Oh, you rented it on YouTube?
Yeah, I did.
On Amazon.
Yeah, on Amazon? Did you rent it from Amazon? Or was, oh, okay.
It's not on...
Prime. I was about to say, like, wait a minute. Did I just spend $4 for no reason?
No.
Are you telling me? I'm sorry, like, actually, like, all these movies have been... Like, they're not really streamable, available.
Mm.
Which is kind of weird. I don't know. I feel like they should. Like, Hero feels like enough of a hit to be,
who knows?
To be streamed. Maybe it was Once Upon a Time. But, yeah, I think that'll do it for this episode. Next week, it'll be about Monk Man. I mean, Once Upon a Time in China. It'll be about Krillin.
Krillin.
You know Krillin?
Yeah, he's not bald though. He has that like long ponytail, but like it's like half.
Oh yeah, bye. I'm thinking Japanese monk.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking like, I mean, Shaolin monk too. Yeah. All right, that's fair. But the dots on his head? No,
he doesn't have dots. No. At least I don't think he does. I don't, it's been a while. It's been a long time.
We will find out if he has dots on his head next week. So next week, Once Upon a Time in China. We'll see you then. Quick shout out. Patreon page, come and check us out for some cool stuff. We'll be releasing, if you want the episodes early, the plan is Mondays, and everybody else will get it by the end of the week. So we'll see you then to wrap it up. Peace.
Bye.